In the name of God, amen. In that city, there was a widow who kept coming to him and saying, "Grant me justice against my opponent." And for a while, the judge refused, but later said to himself, "Though I have no fear of God or respect anyone, because this widow keeps bothering me, I will grant her justice, or she will wear me out with her continual coming." Keep praying. Don't lose heart. Don't give up, is what Jesus was offering the disciples that day. I'm imagining that the secret Jesus was trying to let the disciples into was that they were in it for the long haul, not to count on the days ahead to get any easier as they worked among the people and headed toward what would ultimately be Jesus' death on the cross. Often called the parable of the unjust judge, this story is really not about the judge. It's about the woman. It's about the widow and her persistence. And the more remarkable because of that, Jesus chose the woman, the powerless one, to show power. Because, of course, in Jesus' day and in many countries even still today, widows were outcast. They had nothing. Couldn't inherit property. Their only recourse was to find the brother of their dead husband to marry them. Objects of derision, recipients of favors, perhaps, but in the classical way, powerless. But not this one of Jesus' telling. Powerless in world terms, powerful enough to know her rights and refuse the enforced victimization that widowhood might inflict. Truth to power, perhaps, we would say today. And certainly in it for the long haul, again and again, she came to the judge for justice. It's also interesting that when the judge does give in, what he says is, "I will grant her justice." So the parable, let me say, is more accurately, as most of us now would call it, the parable of the persistent widow. It was, I imagine, a comfort and a call to the disciples, and I think to us, to let us know that Jesus understood well that this is not short-term work. The widow is assurance that the least of these and the least of each part of us not only is worthy, but can make it through. This past week, I attended the 75th anniversary of the National Council of Churches, which met in Boston. The NCC is an ecumenical organization of 38 Christian denominations of the Episcopal Church. 38 Christian denominations of which the Episcopal Church was a founding member. It was formed out of the crucible of the violence of World War II, and its ongoing mission is working toward Christian unity, advocating for peace and justice among its members and in the public square. The NCC over the years has been both activist and reconciler in state and global affairs. And often against great odds, it has refused to be silent, persistently working for those to whom justice has been denied. I can't say we're much closer either to unity or justice for all. Yet, like the widow in Jesus' parable, the NCC persists. The anniversary gathering included visits to member churches, a Greek Orthodox seminary and chapel, the Episcopal Cathedral of St. Paul, where we welcomed the bishop and where she welcomed us to this place, the African Meeting House on Beacon Hill, and the Armenian Church of the Holy Trinity. We worship together, experiencing a variety of liturgies, as you can imagine, Orthodox chanting, gospel singing and choir, and of course, the orderly evening prayer service from the Book of Common Prayer. But most of all, we heard stories of joy and struggle, of persistence, keeping on when the keeping on seemed impossible. How to be and build a church in a country that would rather not have you, as was the case with the Greek Orthodox and the early Armenians who were here. Or how to welcome all neighbors, as the Episcopal Cathedral has done, with a congregation diverse in every way, racially, nationally, economically, unhoused, and those with more than enough, as well as being home to the 200 or more Muslims who worship there every week for Friday prayers. At Holy Trinity Armenian Church, we heard stories of escape from the genocide of 1915. In the midst of suffering and sorrow and grief and xenophobia, the people persisted here in this country, building a church and a community that continues today to support many, many people within and without their community. A little sideline is the good news that the Episcopal Church in those early years was indeed a welcoming presence, offering a place for people to worship. But their persistence over the years, and indeed their faith in God, has carried them through to be leaders in the city of Boston and also in the National Council of Churches and many other places that we know. Our last visit was with the First African Baptist Church, built in 1806. Take note of that date. Often called the home of the abolitionist movement, William Lloyd Garrison, the Grimke sisters, Frederick Douglass, preached and spoke there. And it was here that persistence became also a call to action. As our group of about 150 filed in, marveling at the sturdiness of the old church building, the preacher called for quiet. And as the silence descended, she began, "Take a look at your feet." Dutifully, we all looked down. "Now, look at the floor," she said. "These boards are almost 220 years old. Imagine and remember now those who have stood on that floor, those who worshiped here, those who struggled and fought for freedom, those who made it through these 220 years. They are your witnesses, she said. They are your helpers. They are the saints who join us even now in this work of being church. So thank them, she said, and to the God who watches over us all, that we may persist for the next 220 years. And then she led us in a call and response gospel hymn. If I'd known, I might have asked for it today, but I only found out a few days ago. You probably know it. It's in Levi's 208. We've come this far by faith, leaning on the Lord, trusting in God's holy word. God's never failed us yet. Not gonna turn around. Every time I come to St. Michael's, either from 99th Street or directly on Amsterdam Avenue, or even when I look at the website or see the worship bulletin, you know what it says? It's a welcome sign, of course, but even more, it's a history lesson. Worshiping and serving since 1807. And if I understand it right, worshiping and serving, if not in this same building, on this same geographical space. So I invite you too to look at your feet. Look at your feet and check the floor. Imagine with me below that floor, past the basement maybe, and imagine now almost 220 years of worshipers, of saints who have gone before, whose witness and service are the foundation today. It doesn't mean that history was always pretty or perfect or even that the right choices were made, but that the community was striving to be faithful. And they are watching over us even now in these times to help us to do the same. Not to give up, but to persist in answering the gospel call to gather to worship and to serve. So whether you're here for the first time or you've been here for decades, you're now that part of that community of worshiping and serving. In these few weeks I've been here, of course, I've seen and experienced a lot of that. A lot of it has taken persistence over the years. And then even yesterday, another example of the many of you who are part of marches and rallies calling for justice for all, knowing that neither will you give up until justice is done. So it is on these shoulders we stand, on this history that we are given courage to continue into the future, to worship, to serve, and to know that God is our companion in this way, and that the Jesus who tells us the story of the persistent widow will enable all of us to move into a future, not only with persistence, but with the knowledge that justice indeed will come. Amen.
Amen.